Thanks so much, Carrie. I'm going to change gears again. I'm going to give you a biological mystery story today, and we don't have the answer to the mystery yet, but so I'm going to just kind of set the stage for what we'd like to know about soybeans adapted to tropical environments. And I think this has come up already in this session about how do we deal with adaptation of a species that maybe is not going to perform well. And I know earlier I heard of the species in Michigan which had to perform during their season. And so here we're talking about the opposite. We're taking soybeans which are not typically adapted to tropical environments and trying to understand how that might happen genetically and especially at the molecular level. So I like to say, to remind people, that soybean is a food legume from East Asia originally, so it was it grows wild there still as glycine soja, and it's been used for millennia as food in different forms. Of course, in the Americas, we've adopted this as a feed legume on the protein side, on the meal, but also as a food legume for the vegetable oil that's extracted first. But it can be a food. I believe it will be a food in the future, and so I want to promote that as an idea. And the research I want to tell you about today has to do with optimizing this adaptation idea so that we can maximize yield potential. And I just want to give you a little bit of background about that. So we are concerned in general, let's see if I have a mouse, yep, about the length of the season. And in the U.S. we kind of call this maturity. Oops. And that's a concept that doesn't necessarily translate to the tropics directly. And basically, this is an idea of the season length of the species from seed to seed, essentially. And it has to do with making sure that the plant can produce enough vegetative mass to support an optimum seed production. So this vegetative to reproductive balance is really important for what we would call maturity. And if you have this good potential of vegetative mass supporting reproductive parts of the life cycle, then you can potentially also put on top of that some yield stability. So, of course, there are other components to yield, but one of the first ones is having an optimized maturity system. And I just want to illustrate that here. And I noted that Doreen also used a slide where I'm showing the line between vegetative growth and reproductive. And in the central and northern U.S., a number of studies have been done that basically show that if you can have about a third of your growth period happen in the vegetative part of plant development before the switch to reproductive, you can have a very optimized yield potential then. And so I wanted to show that in a bar graph representation where green is vegetative growth and purple is reproductive. And a typical life cycle for soybean plant might be 120 days from seed to seed. And if you have too short of a vegetative period in that 120-day cycle, you will produce very little seeds, it turns out. And so what you would really like to do is have that to be about a one-third of the life cycle be vegetative and two-thirds be reproductive, giving you a like. Farmers like that. But they also like that one-third, two-third distributed in a shorter period, so 100 days versus 120. I think Doreen mentioned this, is farmers are looking for shorter seasons. And this has many, many components, I'm sure, one of which is a reduction in risk or taking advantage of certain rainfall periods or all kinds of things that farmers care about, but they care about high yield during short season. Okay, so soybean is a photoperiod-sensitive plant. It's a short-day plant, which means it cares about the length of the dark period. And I want to introduce you to this idea of photoperiod sensitivity by thinking about the length of the day depending on where you are from the equator, north and south. And this image here, the graph, is a kind of a complicated way of thinking about it, but these lines here are the length of the day during the month of the year depending on your latitude. So for 30 degrees north, you would have maybe a 14-hour day on the longest day of the year, but at 50 degrees north, like Paris, for instance, you're going to have over a 16-hour day on the longest day of the year. And of course, in the tropics, by definition, you're 23.5 degrees latitude or closer to the equator, and so almost regardless of the day of the year, you're very, very close to a 12-hour day. So this non-change in day length really confuses soybeans that were domesticated and live naturally in temperate zones. So really the natural range of soybean goes from about 30 degrees away from the equator to about 50 degrees. And so what happens when you are sending the wrong signals to the plant is that in a 12-hour day, as shown in this picture, although you might not be able to tell exactly, plants that are adapted to a temperate zone come up out of the ground, they start their vegetative growth, but they get confused about where they are in their life cycle, and they flower, they stop growing, and they end up not up to our knees in height. It's very, very hard to have much yield potential when you're 20-some centimeters tall. Typical U.S. variety might be 100 centimeters tall and have nodes, many more nodes than a 28-centimeter tall plant. So it's not just the height. Of course, it's pod density and seed size, all the yield components. But if you get non-adapted lines growing in the tropics, you get this terrible response. The plants come up, they get confused about where they are, they flower when they're very small, and you just can't get that yield potential. So we'd like to understand at a molecular genetic basis why this is happening. So this is just sort of the fly-through of our one research project that we have. So this is really soybean adaptation for the tropics. I'm going to tell you about three very important genes in soybean: the major maturity gene E1, a gene for stem architecture that we call DT1, and one that I'm going to refer to here as the long juvenile gene. And we think that these three things could be major contributors to how soybean adapts in tropical environments, and we want to test that so that we can identify combinations of alleles of those three genes that will allow us to maximize this adaptation or yield potential. And so this image below is taken in Costa Rica, one of our winter nursery environments, which is at about 10 degrees away from the equator. And the all these varieties were planted on the same day, and I think this was about day 80 after planting. And this is a Brazilian variety that has a long juvenile trait, and so it looks quite different from these are Mozambique varieties, and then these are varieties from Ghana. And so you can see there's a wide range of growth responses even in these short days, and they may be more complicated to understand than even what we're attempting here. So for those three genes that I said we think are really important, the first one is the E1 gene, soybean maturity. In the U.S., it's the major factor for flowering time and maturity. It can control up to 40% of the difference in flowering time and maturity. It's been cloned recently, and we know some things about it that are listed here. Most of what's used is a recessive allele that I'll just refer to here as the lowercase E1, and it's a missense allele. It results in early flowering and maturity compared to the functional dominant E1. That difference often is about 15 days, depending on certain things. The gene is on chromosome 6 near the centromere. The DT1 gene is one that controls stem architecture, and DT1 is just short for determinant. So we call soybeans one of really multiple types, but the main types are indeterminate, which continue to grow in the main stem after flowering, and the determinant type, which pretty much ceases main stem growth after flowering. So the determinant gene was also recently cloned. It's an orthologue of the P terminal flower. I'm almost certain it's the same gene that's involved in bush versus climbing type beans. I mean, it's common among many species of legume. In soybean, we have four missense alleles of DT1, and the mutant version or recessive version leads to these very abruptly terminating stem plants after flowering. And you can just visualize that difference here, where these are determinate types that were induced to flower when the plants were fairly small, and then these are the indeterminate types from that publication. That gene is on chromosome 19 and well characterized now. Finally, the third gene I want to talk about is what I'm going to call the long juvenile gene. And this is not a new gene, but one that I think hasn't been particularly well characterized to this point. So the gene is not cloned yet. It controls flowering in short days. And so this is a gene that allows a plant to not rush to flowering when it sees a 12-hour day. And so this is really important in tropical soybean adaptation, obviously. And so the recessive, the way I'm writing this, the recessive LJ plants delay their flowering in those 12-hour days, so they keep growing vegetatively in a short day. And what's been studied the most are two sources of this from our germplasm collection. One is an accession, PI159925, from Peru originally, and then the second one is a Brazilian line that was a what I'll call a sport, but an identified mutation in a Brazilian cultivar. And so the photo here is just to illustrate, which again, it's really hard to see, but this is the top of the conventional juvenile plant grown in a 12-hour day. And somewhere in here is the top of the presumably long juvenile plant segregating from an experiment there. Okay, those are the three genes. So let me tell you a little bit about the geography and the allele distributions. As I mentioned, soybean was domesticated in East Asia, so China, Japan, Korea, somewhere around there. And from other studies that I've done, I know that the predominant genotype there would be to have this set of genes, so functional E1 recessive determinant types, and then no sign of that long juvenile trait. This is a 30-degree latitude line here. In the United States, some work that I've done recently has shown that we're using recessive E1 indeterminants and no long juvenile in the Midwest and northern part of the U.S. Soybean production areas, but then in the south we have a genotype more typical to the East Asian varieties. And then, even though I don't work there, I happen to know that in Brazil, when soybeans first moved to South America, they were in Argentina and Brazil, and they used, again, the genotype that looked like what the Asian soybeans looked like. But then in order to move to the Cerrado, closer to the equator, that's where this long juvenile gene came in. Also, I should note that these types historically have all been determinant in South America, but we have heard they're moving now to what we call semi-determinant and indeterminate types. And so our target locations for the project were in Ghana and in Mozambique, which are both fairly close to the equator as listed there. We wanted to know what gene combinations would work there for adaptation. And so the middle of the mystery, I guess, is that we're running an experiment to understand that. And that experiment is being conducted, I'm sorry you can't see her that well here, but this is Carrie Miranda. She's our Borlaug research fellow. And she is in Ghana right now. She just sent me a text this morning. She's 33% of the way through harvest. She has, it's her project to take these experiments that we're doing and run them in Ghana to understand the adaptation components. And behind her, although you probably can't see, are some of her experimental lines in the field that she is measuring certain characteristics so we can understand them. And then in these tables is a description of the populations that we've set up to create the recombinant inbred lines to understand different gene combinations. So essentially in the field in Ghana, we're testing gene combinations. And in the bottom table, I've tried to make a code here to make this a little less convincing. And so a parent that has a black letter by it is a U.S. line, either from the Midwest or the North or the South. And then in red, the coded ones all have the long juvenile trait, but they have different combinations of E1 and DT1, so that if you look in the top table, we have these six populations that can basically be divided into three groups, and we're looking at the effect of either some genes fixed or other genes segregating, so that we hopefully have enough replications of these allele combinations to minimize the effect of genetic background and gain some understanding of adaptation in that environment. So as I said, we're in the middle of this mystery. We started the project with the initiation of the Soybean Innovation Lab in 2013. We struggled a little bit with dealing with some of the African adapted lines in our Missouri environment. We had a hard time getting them to flower when we wanted them to and when other things were flowering, but we ended up advancing materials through our winter nursery in Costa Rica for a little while, and then this is where we are now. So this is the country of Ghana. We have the student is located in Tamale, and she has five locations, three at government research stations and two farmer fields, for the seed supply that we had ready this year. She's just collecting those data now in the field for plant height, pod number. We're also looking at seed shatter and then seed yield. So yield component, she's also done days to flowering and days to maturity. So she's collecting data in this phase, and she will also, because we have clone genes for two of the three and a linked molecular marker for the third one, she will genotype all of her lines so that we know what allele combination they have. She will run the experiment again in 2017 in field trials in Ghana, analyze the results in 2018, identify the best adapted genotypes, and that will help us understand that anytime anybody wants to make a cross in the future, they can get back that adaptation phenotype really directly. And we hope to publish and share Germplasm 2018. Just to mention, here's Kerry again in the middle. And this is Andrew Skabu. He is our University of Missouri connection for her breeding component. And then this is Dr. Nicholas Denoir. He is the soybean breeder at the station near where she's located. Also, I believe this is in her field, too. Okay, and I tried to mention throughout the people working on the project, but I would like to acknowledge that there were, of course, a lot of entities that work on this, and people that I didn't talk about. Kerry Clark's played a big role in this. And I'd like to say that in the end, what we're hoping for, our target is the villager. This is a villager in Mozambique making soy milk. So that with this new knowledge, that can be translated all the way through a soybean breeding program into new varieties, some yield stability or opportunity for farmers who can produce either their own food. And we have a little mantra that Kerry came up with, which is, share some, sell some, save some, and eat some. And so those are our three things, and we hope that that works out to increase smallholder food security in the future with soybean. So thank you. Yes. Right. Right, E1 and DT1 are cloned, and that's published information. I did not do that work. I just am so happy that the other folks did, including Randy was part of the DT1 work. The long juvenile trait is a little bit trickier. We are working with Elroy Kober in Canada, who's worked with that gene before, and we've talked to a lot of Brazilian, not a lot, but a few Brazilian breeders in the know about soybean. And I feel like there is a fundamental misunderstanding about what they're calling long juvenile and what I'm working with that's long juvenile. So there's a bit of confusion there. So we think we know where the long juvenile gene is, and it's not our work to find it. We know other people are working on that. So we're happy enough with linkage for that. Yeah, E1 is a 500 base pair gene. You could clone it like tomorrow and just look. It doesn't have any introns. It's a legume-specific transcription factor, so.
Yeah, just a comment. I knew Phil Henson when he was a breeder at the University of Florida at ARS, and that is where the first juvenile came from, with the Brazilian plant breeders who he was training. And it ended up in a cultivar called Padre that was grown in Texas, and the Brazilians took that back home. So my reaction is that a long juvenile, it's the same thing in terms of, I'm not sure where the mutant occurred, but
right, I think it's
in the U.S.
The long juvenile appears to have arisen multiple independent times, and then there are stronger and weaker alleles. There's interactions that are a little bit confusing. But as soon as that gene is cloned, we're going to go right in and zero in on what we have. So, for instance, we have Ghanaian lines in our population, and they act like long juveniles, but we haven't done any genetics yet to say whether or not those are alleles of the same gene or separate genes. We'll have to work that out.
What the Brazilians started doing was taking the good lines, group 3, 4, et cetera, putting the juvenile in that, and all of a sudden they had it. Okay.
One last question.
Yeah, if you want to comment, I noticed on your map you didn't show any soybean
Yeah, Ken Dashiel has told me that the long juvenile is likely coming from the Malaysian, Indonesian soybeans. I don't know of any source there that's been studied for that, so we'll have to integrate that knowledge as we go. So we should be able to figure out pretty quickly if it's allelic, since we know where, we'll know if it's a similar locus. We have markers we could look on the chromosome to see what we get. And some of these populations, we skewed heavily against the conventional juvenile because we didn't want to test hundreds and hundreds of lines that were going to flower in 25 days. So we tried to eliminate as many as possible. And in two of the populations, we actually, at F2, we made a hard phenotypic cut for, you had to be long juvenile to be in the study. And there we were just comparing the two sources of long juvenile. So we feel like it's a malleable system, and we hope that it yields a mystery solved, a good book, good story. Thank you.